Now, being fan fiction, the people who are excited by science fiction or other sorts of cult stories, there are some like Star Trek, which has evoked all sorts of spin-offs. I think Star Wars is more concerned about copyright. How do you go writing something that's so closely aligned to Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
It wasn't easy. I had the idea and I just started to run with it. And then I had a lot of doubts. Would I ever get it published? Would I have to just maybe put snippets of it online? I had no idea what was going to happen, but I just talked myself into persevering with it. And eventually when I thought I'd pretty much finished it, I was in touch with a publisher in Sweden, a group of people there who were very into peace and nonviolent action and environmentalism and so on. They'd never done any fiction before, let alone cli-fi or fan fiction even, but they were willing to take a punt with it. And I spent a bit of time trying to contact the rights holders, and nobody seemed to be quite sure who to talk to, and that, you know, that the author has passed away and his agent has passed away. So in the end, we decided that we would go ahead with it. Partly also given that Douglas Adams himself encouraged fan fiction.
Well, that's a good start.
Perhaps at some cafe at the end of the universe, there's a meeting planning to stop a freeway going through Earth, or the mining companies destroying suns to power their interstellar hotels. Welcome to Understory, this 16th day of September 2020. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Next Monday is humanity's International Day of Peace. The United Nations General Assembly has declared this as a day devoted to strengthening the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of non-violence and ceasefire. So in the spirit of the International Day of Peace and a year of COVID-19 where people, even Adrian Glamorgan, have been discovered reading novels, sit back and hear how one man and Douglas Adams fan, Dr. Marty Branigan, peace studies lecturer, artist, now novelist, who has written a tribute to Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as a way of processing his own involvement in non-violent environmental campaigns such as the Franklin, Roxby Downs and Bentley. He hopes the lessons he's learnt about non-violent action, locking on gates to stop fracking, coal or the forests, are as true for the future as it is the present.
So, could you introduce yourself and what you're the author of?
Yeah, hi, Adrian. I'm Dr. Marty Branigan. I'm a lecturer in peace studies at the University of New England, and I'm the author of Locked On, the seventh and most illegal in the Hitchhiker's Guide trilogy.
And it's a cli-fi novel. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, it's climate fiction. It's a fairly new genre. It was first described in about 2013, and it is similar to science fiction, but with perhaps more of a tendency towards looking at climate change, looking at solutions to climate change, looking at how it's impacting on us and how it might impact on our futures.
It's also a piece of fan fiction. You obviously are a fan of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that whole series. In fact, my son's just got out the radio series, which we've been listening to and enjoying tremendously. But yeah, I really got into the Hitchhiker's Guide series way back in the early 80s and late 70s. And it seemed to be one of the few things that actually made a bit of sense in that era of threatened, mutually assured destruction, where we had these nuclear weapons aimed at each other, USSR, and so on. And it was, yeah, I just found the humour in it and the brilliance of Adams' writing really inspiring.
And I guess there was a need to deal with freeways going through planets that hadn't really got proper notice, am I right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is actually quite prescient, because after that, pretty much, were a large number of protests against bypasses throughout the UK and in Ireland.
Now, you've been a participant observer at Lock the Gate and other blockades. Have you been able to use that experience in writing this artwork?
Yeah, absolutely. So I been an activist since the Franklin River blockade in 1983.
I was there too, Marty. We didn't bump into each other, though. Or maybe we did.
It was a big event, an extraordinary life-changing event for me and I think for a lot of people. But after that, quite a few of us went on to Roxby Downs, the anti-nuclear protests. So this novel is partly based on anti-nuclear activism, but also the more recent climate activism, the protests against coal and coal seam gas in northern New South Wales.
Now, many listeners will not have had an experience of a non-violent action, and when the news reports these actions, they're often very drama-driven, conflict-driven. What's your experience, both of those dramas, but also the lived experience of being in a blockade?
Yeah, it's very different to how the mass media usually portrays it. You do get some good journalism covering it. Tends to be on community radio stations and smaller independent news sheets. They're usually very big events in your life. They can have a significant impact on you if you get arrested, for example. It's quite a traumatic thing to go through, but sometimes it's the only thing that will get that mass media attention that you need in order to move an issue along, in order to get public support behind it.
I suppose some people feel that the trauma of climate emergency is bigger than any individual trauma they have. But in what way can the arts help you and others process the conflict that comes with saying no to something that is going to undermine our environment?
Yeah, it's a good question, Adrian. It can help you express the sorts of things you might go through as an individual and as a group. And also, it's an extension of that protesting. I mean, you can stand up, you can be arrested and dragged off, maybe get a little bit of media attention. But at root, we need to change the fundamental ideas that are beneath the behaviours that we engage in. We need to address the idea that we're all powerless, and as you know, there are only a few people and institutions that have power that can make change. And I think that's a totally erroneous assumption. We certainly, all of us have a carbon footprint, and we all have the power to change that in small ways and have impacts on our circles, so that when we work together, those impacts are improved. But also, I think we need to challenge ideas like we need to keep spending $32 billion every year on defence when no one's actually attacking us. Climate change is a far bigger threat to us, and we need to, I think, bring back all these planes that are flying around in the Middle East and make sure we have enough firefighting planes.
Marty Brannigan, you've got a doctorate. You're not afraid to use it. You can write academic articles. Why a novel?
Well, it's aimed at a very different audience. The academic stuff tends to not get read by a large number of people. You can force your students to read some of it, but some of it's quite dry. With the novel, you can reach a much wider audience. So I tried to take some of the things that I wrote about in my PhD and then my book and make them more accessible. So throw in a bit of humour, some drama, some romance, and just try and make something that's entertaining as well as educational.
There are some who argue that reading can be a revolutionary act. Paulo Freire, the Brazilian who wrote Pedagogy of the Oppressed, said reflection and action were both necessary to transform the world. Some academics argue that the writing process can engender empathy, helping readers meet new characters, new voices, new perspectives, and that reading supports social, environmental, and peace activism.
Is there an important element of writing a novel that allows you to deal with some of the dystopian futures that are obviously in front of us unless we do something, and help manage that question through the arts?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Intellectual stuff is all very well, but it's it can be quite limited. It's harder to write about emotional things, but it's also harder to write about speculative things. And given that we are faced with this extraordinary crisis of not just climate change, but biodiversity loss, the great extinction phase that we're in at the moment, we really need to be able to be imaginative in how we think our way around this, how we empower people to make change. I think sometimes we feel overwhelmed by the magnitude of the crises that we're facing. And the novel tries to show that in some places, nonviolent action has been really successful, but a lot of people simply haven't heard of how extraordinarily successful that the Bentley blockade near Lismore, for example, was, where the entire community rose up, and even though they're up against the state government and a powerful corporation, they managed to succeed.
Today on Understory, Adrienne Glamorgan brings you a story about a piece of fan fiction that can be defined by us as a kind of peace literature.
Although people came out of World War One, for example, absolutely traumatised and really anti-war, in the last few decades, there's been this real shift to glorifying Gallipoli, the disaster that was Gallipoli. So there's all this military history. There's a lot of militarism, a lot of war in our movies, a lot of crime shows, a lot of violence. And I've tried to counter this cultural violence by having a book which is about non-violent action, but that is also something that hopefully is exciting and dramatic and full of courage and heroism.
Has involvement in the lockdown, the anti-fracking blockades in the Franklin, how's that shaped your understanding of wild nature, but also farming? What have some of the thoughts that have come to you because of your going beyond the metropolitan to do your activism?
Yeah, it's been interesting getting out of the city where I grew up and getting to all these incredible places like the Franklin and the desert in South Australia, Jabiluka, Chalundi, the northeast forests. It's taken me to some incredible places. And pretty early on, I decided I couldn't live in a city again. So I've been living in the bush for a long time now. In Alice Springs and Armidale and elsewhere, including near Fremantle, where you guys are from. And I've found it's quite different. We often get overlooked by the city. The city often doesn't understand the sort of things we're going through. For example, Sydney's still getting a lot of rain, whereas we're still in the highest level of water restrictions up here because we're still in the middle of a drought. It's very different. It's been just a wonderful journey trying to understand rural life and learning to grow my own food and be a lot more dependent on whether it rains or not.
Well, getting back to your novel, I imagine it took you some time. It's been out. It's getting a little bit of interest there. How do you judge the success of your novel?
Yeah, a good question. I felt that it was a success to find a publisher and to finish it. That was the start. It's not been a bestseller by any means. I don't know how whether it will grow over time, the number of people who have been buying it or reading it online through libraries or through library copies, the hard copy. Part of it is an illustrated ebook as well as a paperback. And yeah, it's been great to have people say that they read it and enjoyed it. It's been great going to launches and being on panels discussing it. And I find it gives me an opportunity to talk about these issues like climate change and also the successes of blockades like the Bentley one, hopefully to start spreading those stories so people are aware that nonviolent direct action can actually be really successful if masses of people take it up.
Well, your Infinite Planet oil painting is remarkable. It shows that activists can be involved in the arts and appreciation, your novel gives you a chance to process your experience. I wonder where the distribution agents for your novel might well be at Blockades, with people who are waiting, having time, wanting to think through, maybe hope for a different kind of future.
Yeah, well, it's a very small publishing company that I went with. Although with my monograph, that was with a big company and they didn't do all that much advertising either. So often it's just word of mouth, but also wonderful interviewers on the radio who want to talk with you. This sort of thing helps to get the word out about it. So it's fairly easy to get a copy. You can just go down to your local library and ask them to buy a copy. It's called Locked On. Or if you put it into your search engine, Ecosia or whatever else you use, just put in Locked On and Marty Branigan. That way you can order either the paperback or the illustrated e-version.
Understory has been commemorating this coming Monday's International Day of Peace by pulling up a wing-backed chair, settling in to witness fan fiction author and non-violent peace and environmental activist Marty Branigan, his writing process and motives. Thanks to the author and Understory's own Adrian Glamorgan with our contribution to the International Day of Peace on Monday. How will you be celebrating the International Day of Peace? The cities of Subiaco, Fremantle, Coburn, Rockingham, Busselton and Albany will finish their planting of ginkgo trees, grown from seeds from a tree in Hiroshima that miraculously survived the atom bomb. They are part of a worldwide movement, Mayors for Peace, that is urging countries around the world, including Australia, to sign the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Thanks for your company. You can listen to this and other Understory programs online on RTRFM or podcast in all the usual places. And of course, tune in next week as there's always more to explore on Understory, radio for the planet.